let's come and think about this story that David read to us. And I want us to think for a moment about what is actually going on in this story. It's a story that many people will have heard about. It's one of those things, one of those Bible stories that even without a church background or even without much understanding of the Bible, it's a story that many people will have heard something about. That there was a time, they would say, when Jesus lost his temper. He charged into the temple and drove out people who were buying and selling, as well as the sheep and the cattle that were there, so that people could buy them to offer as sacrifices. People will have heard something like that. Some may have picked up on the detail that Jesus used a whip. He got a whip and he drove people out and said, well, that's not a very nice thing to do. It's not a very Christian way to behave. It can give a picture of Jesus doing something which, if someone tried to do today, would get them arrested, and can be used to make accusations about the character of Jesus. So is that really what's going on? Or is there something else? So we're going to think about, but we're going to look behind the story to see what was happening. But as we do so, we try and do so without it's losing its force and impact. But this was an event that struck people and got their imagination and thought, something special, something is going on here, something is changing. Jesus is doing something that shows a different way of engaging with God. The things that we're used to, the things that we thought were how things had to be. Jesus is saying that there is something different. Something has to change. It's one of the stories about Jesus that appears in all four Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, with each one providing a slightly different insight. Matthew, the one that we read earlier, Matthew, Mark, and Luke all position this story towards the end of the ministry of Jesus. After he rode into Jerusalem on a donkey, we find him going into the temple and doing what we read earlier. John, which is the only gospel that provides the detail about the whip, positions the story at the beginning of the ministry of Jesus, in chapter 2, right at the beginning of the gospel, where it seems to be making the statement that Jesus is the new temple, that he is now the way people will be able to come and meet with God. For hundreds of years, people had come to Jerusalem, to the temple, the place that God had caused to be built, as the place where people could come and worship him. And that was right. That was what they should do. That was what they'd been told to do. But Jesus came and said, actually, it's all changing. And now people are going to come to God through me. That's what John's gospel tells us. The account in Matthew that David read a few moments ago gives the idea of Jesus riding into Jerusalem on his donkey, going up to the temple, marching straight in and driving people out. It's a continual flow in the story. Mark's gospel speaks about Jesus riding into Jerusalem, going into the temple, having a look round, seeing what was going on, going out to Bethany for the night, a few miles outside the city, and coming back in the next day to stage his protest. So this is not someone losing his temper. This is someone seeing something that he believes is profoundly wrong and reacting deliberately and defiantly and in total control of what he was doing. Matthew has the religious leaders getting cross at what they see happening. Mark and Luke go further and speak about, because of what Jesus did here, they try and find a way to kill him. So this moment is seen as a pivotal event in leading up to the arrest, trial, and crucifixion of Jesus. So different perspectives from the different Gospels. But the next question, why was buying and selling doves, why was changing money a problem? And why did people need to change money? Why do people need to buy and sell cattle and sheep and doves? And the thing is, there are very good reasons for those things to be taking place. People would travel long distances to come to the temple. If you lived in the north of the country, or if you lived in a different country, because people came from hundreds of miles around to Jerusalem for the Passover. And it was clear that they had to go. They couldn't just stay in their own town and have a sort of local Passover celebration and the other big festivals. They had to go to Jerusalem. It was in the law. It was what they were told to do. And they had to go there to sacrifice a cow or a sheep. And it was unrealistic to expect them to travel those hundreds of miles with their sheep or cattle. It was much more sensible to buy when they arrived and use those animals as their sacrifices. In fact, the law that God gave to his people even provided for it. We find way back in the Old Testament that people were encouraged to put aside a tenth of their crops and a tenth of the new calves and lambs that had been born into their herds each year and offer them to God. It's the principle of the tithe, giving a tenth to God. But the place of sacrifice was the temple, and for some people it would be a long journey. For others, they'd have been so blessed by God that taking all the sheep and cattle with them would have been a bit of a logistical nightmare. So they would sell it, they would go to the temple, and when they got to the temple, they would have used the money to buy more. And Deuteronomy tells us, use the silver to buy whatever you like, cattle, sheep, wine, or other fermented drinks, or anything you wish. Then you and your household shall eat there in the presence of the Lord your God and rejoice. So, provision for buying and selling animals in Jerusalem at the time of these major festivals was legitimate and required. It had to happen. How about this money-changing thing? At the time of the Passover, people were also required to pay the temple tax. You may remember there's a time when some people come to Peter and say, does not your master pay the temple tax? And Peter gets in a bit of a stress about that. But everybody had to pay it. It was a fixed amount, half a shekel. Whether you were rich or poor, you had to pay half a shekel. And it could only be presented in Tyrian coinage. That's coins that come from the area of Tyre, a major trading nation. It was reliable currency. It was the sort of the gold standard of the day. That's the only money that was acceptable to offer as your temple tax. And so people would come from all around Israel and from the neighboring countries with their local currencies, and they need to change it for Tyrian coinage to pay their temple tax. So it was another necessary service that had to be provided. So what was the problem? Well, actually, there were at least two problems with what was going on. One related to access to God, and the other was about corruption. See, the way in which it was being done was getting in the way of people coming to worship God. This is a picture of the temple, roughly at the time of Jesus, and in the middle you can see sort of the central area of the temple. And as you got more and more into the centre, you got into more holy and holy areas. And the big area around the outside, you can see, is known as the Gentiles' courtyard. And the way it worked is some people could come into the outer bit, and then some people could go on a bit nearer, and then some people go in a bit further, until only the high priest could get right into the middle. And he was only allowed right into the middle on one day of the year. And yeah, the outermost bit is for the court of the Gentiles. Anybody could go there. But non-Jewish people couldn't go any further. They weren't allowed into the better bits of the temple. And even if you were a Jew and you could go in a bit further, you had to come through the court of the Gentiles to get into the inner areas of the temple. And it was in this court of the Gentiles that the tables for money changing had been set up. It was here that the animals were available for purchase. So they were getting in the way of people who'd come to pray and worship. And this was what Jesus was not happy about. Many of you, when you came in this evening, would have been greeted by Wynne and offered a notice sheet, and you'd have come on in. Or Sylvia. Sylvia this evening, wasn't it? Somebody. Wynne. You'd have been greeted by Wynne with that smile and given that notice sheet, and that would have been easy. But imagine if instead of that, you'd had to pick your way through tables, obstructing all that area where people were selling Bibles and song sheets and candles and so on. And you weren't allowed to come in here until you'd bought something. How would you have felt? You might have thought, actually, that's not what I wanted this evening. I wanted to be able to come and to meet with God. And it was something like that going on here that Jesus is objecting to. And it refers back to what has been said hundreds of years before about the temple being open to all. In Isaiah 56, it talks about their burnt offerings and sacrifices will be accepted on my altar. This is God speaking. For my house will be called a house of prayer for all nations. And in Isaiah, it's talking about non-Jews being brought back into the community of people worshipping God. But the focus of Jesus is wider, in that the selling and buying activities taking place are getting in the way of everyone coming to worship. It wasn't that the buying and selling was wrong. It was necessary. But this wasn't the place for it. And this is where the question of corruption comes in. Because buying and selling in the temple had only started recently. We think about AD 30. Previously, the same stalls had been set up on the nearby Mount of Olives. It's about half a mile away. You could go along and buy your sheep or buy your cow or change a bit of money, and then you'd have a nice walk down into the temple and everything would be fine. But in AD 30, the priests who were responsible for managing temple worship authorised their move into the temple itself, probably as a means of getting some of the profit. That's what we think was going on. And we see something similar when we think about the money changers. Now, imagine again, when you came into this building, as well as those stalls that you had to navigate your way around, there was David, picking on David because he's our treasurer, sitting at a table selling you new shiny £20 notes with a sign saying that these were the only acceptable currency that you could use to put some money into the offering. And that for the benefit of providing this service, David would charge you £25 for each £20 note. You might want to give that a go. The traders would have made a profit, and the priests would have taken some of it for themselves. And so we get a sense of those with responsibility for leading the people into worship, focusing more on how they can become rich through it. And this is something Jesus isn't prepared to tolerate. And many of us may be aware of stories of those in high-profile Christian ministry who've been accused of being more interested in profit than actually serving God and pointing people to Jesus. And we shake our heads and say that this should not be so. But this story reminds us of the importance of looking at ourselves and the things that we are doing. Is there anything that we are doing that makes it more difficult for people to meet with God? Is there anything that we are doing nominally on the surface to honour God, but that we're really doing it so that we ourselves can benefit? Good questions to ask of ourselves from time to time. The priests, religious authorities, are not pleased with what Jesus is doing. But there are two groups of people who seem delighted. One is the blind and the lame. We find that they come to Jesus in the temple and are healed. Now, one of the laws for priests in the Old Testament was that they could not come into the temple and offer sacrifices if they were blind or lame or disfigured or deformed. And the idea there was there was a desire to ensure that those who were acting as an intermediary between God and the people were holy, were pure. We might look at that and say, well, isn't that a bit discriminatory? But there is a reminder to those of us who are involved in ministering to and leading God's people of the importance of personal holiness and purity. We cannot effectively share the love of Jesus with others if our lives are not right. And so that's where this comes from. And there's strong evidence that some groups had extended this teaching to restrict access of non-perfect people, including those who are blind and lame, from even entering into the temple. You're not fit to go into the place to meet with God. That seemed to be what was happening in different communities at that time. And so as well as Jesus bringing physical healing and wholeness to these people, he was enabling them to fully engage in the worshiping community again. They could go into the temple after meeting with Jesus and meet with God. Are there practices that we adopt, either deliberately or without knowing, that say to people who are not like us that they are not welcome in God's house, not welcome as part of a worshiping community? Do we need Jesus to bring healing to us in those areas of our lives so that we can offer hope and healing to others? And the other group that the authorities seemed to struggle with was children shouting in the temple courts. Disgraceful. These children were excited about being there. They were excited about Jesus. They were recognizing something of who he was and praising him. They were making a disturbance. And the powers that be didn't like it. The priests should have been the ones who recognized Jesus, who welcomed him, who led the people in worship of him. But they didn't. It was left to people like these young children. Just before we came in here, we were talking about how some of our young children in the church are getting excited about Jesus and talking about him and sharing things about him. And that was wonderful to think about. And as another example of that, I'm going to show a very short video of my granddaughter. Because I like videos of my granddaughter. No, there was a reason for showing this video of my granddaughter. It was recorded a few months ago when she was 2 years old, nearly three. She was very keen to tell us she was nearly three, but when she was 2 years old. So we're going to watch this video. The volume at the beginning is a bit difficult to pick up, but hopefully you will get the idea.
Jesus. Jesus, nothing for the Bible, tell me so.
Abby singing Jesus Loves Me. Why did I show you that, apart from the fact that it's my granddaughter? Richard and Emma, Abby's parents, published photos and videos of their two children on a private social media platform that they've invited family and friends to join. So not everybody can see them, but those who have been invited can. And one of the people who's got access to these pictures and videos is Joe's mother, who would describe herself as an atheist. She has real issues with the idea of God, and that's led to some interesting and challenging conversations. She's come along to some of the church services where I've been preaching, and she's been angry with me afterwards for some of the things that I've said about God. It's had its moments. But she says that that video that you have just seen is her favourite video of all the ones that they have put up over the last 2 years or so. And she's gone as far as writing out the words and sticking them on a pencil holder so that she can see them. I may not be able to convince her of the things I believe about God. This simple song of a two-year-old has had an impact on her. Children getting excited and noisy in the house of God in the presence of Jesus is something to welcome and to encourage. Jesus did so on different occasions. It's great to think about the youngsters here who are getting excited about Jesus. So let's seek to find ways in which we can encourage them as they disrupt some of the things that we try and do, and as they point us to Jesus. So what was going on in this story? Jesus in the temple was recognising things he didn't like and responding to them. He was seeing barriers to people as they tried to come to God, and he was working to remove them. He was saying that if the religious system was broken, which it was, there was a new way of coming to God, and that was through himself. He was welcoming and showing interest in people that society on the whole tended to shun or simply ignore. And in doing so, he was speaking out against those in power and becoming identified as a challenge and a problem to be dealt with. It was a hugely powerful act. But it was also in some ways only a symbolic one. It is virtually certain that on the following day, the money changers were back in the temple. It was possible to buy sheep in the temple courts again. There were restrictions on who could get into the inner areas of the temple. The voices of children would have been silenced. But a few days later, Jesus would be in action again. Once again, he would be aware of things he didn't like and would be responding to them. He would be aware of barriers stopping people coming to God, and he would be working to remove them. He would be working to make it possible for people to come to God through him. He would be engaging with people shunned and condemned by society. He would be acting against those in power who had stepped up their efforts to get rid of him. But this time it would not be in the temple, but it would be on the cross. This time it would not be a moment that had an impact on one day, but then things seemed to be back to normal the next. This act would change everything forever, would never be undone. Things would never be the same again. And so in some way, this act of Jesus in the temple, which seems to be the catalyst of the religious leaders to decide to get rid of him, is a foreshadowing of what was going to happen a few days later. Events that we will reflect on in many different ways over this coming week. So let's recognise what Jesus was doing here. Speaking and acting out against what was wrong. Bringing healing and wholeness to people. Engaging with people on the margin. And recognising how he went on to do this in a more powerful way. A way that cost him so much more on the cross. And let's seek to follow his example, as we recognise and rejoice in what he accomplished for us when he died and was restored to life, that we will think about and reflect on as we celebrate the wonderful story of Easter over the next few days. Jesus came to the temple, saw what he didn't like, saw what was stopping people coming to God, and acted to change that. Let's find ways in which we can encourage people to come to God, to meet with this Jesus who did so many wonderful and amazing things for us and for them. And let's identify anything that would stop people coming to him and get rid of those so that we can provide, we can act as conduits for people to meet with him in a way that changes lives. Let's pray.